Good morning. I, for one, love to hear other people's kids. I love that. So I second Greg's words there. Something about hearing your own kids up here is kind of like, all right, somebody better behave themselves. We're going to continue thinking about wisdom this month. And just reminding you, last month we spent that time in Proverbs and talking about that particular book and the wisdom literature, introducing that idea. This whole summer we're going to be spending time talking about the wisdom literature, but we're going to move to the next book in that category, which is Ecclesiastes. So just kind of thinking through some of the things we've already talked about. When we get to Proverbs, we hear a lot about cause and effect. And I use that term divine cause and effect, where we see that in God's world, how God created things, there is a divine order to things, that if you chase after, if you pursue wisdom and you deny the traps of folly, that you'll find good things, that good things will come to you. That if you do good and you work hard and you strive and you save, that you can rest assured, it seems, that you'll have prosperity, that you'll have a future, that you'll have a long life, that's the promise of wisdom, that wisdom has that divine order to it. And then when you turn to the next book and you get to Ecclesiastes and you start to read that, you'll find that there is this preacher, as he is called. He's introduced as the preacher. And he begins to speak, and he says this. He says, I've been there, and I've done that, and this is what I've seen. And that's how we are introduced to Ecclesiastes, is this idea that here's somebody who has, and we get the idea that it's Solomon. He doesn't necessarily come out and use that name per se, but we really get the impression that it is. And he comes out and he says, I have wisdom, right? And if we're thinking about Solomon, he did have wisdom. God gave him wisdom. And he says, I have it, and I'm using it, and I'm looking at the world through the lens of wisdom, and this is what I see. These are the things I see. I see bad things happening to good people. That's what I see. And he said, I look out into the world and I see people who work hard and they save their money and they're wise and they do good things and they get to the end of their life and they die. And then somebody else enjoys it. He said, that's what I see. And he's conflicted by this idea of what he knows to be true from the wisdom of God and what he sees in reality. That there seems to be a conflict in his mind. And this whole book is designed to help us see what we already know. Because we already know that, right? I mean, even as we're reading Proverbs, we're thinking that to ourselves. We're thinking, yeah, I know that's true. But you know, I know this guy once that, you know, he did well and he saved all his money and he worked really hard and he never took vacations and he was working towards retirement early and he gets to the end and he has a heart attack and he dies. And we think, that doesn't make any sense. That's not fair, right? Because we've all experienced things like that, and we've all seen things like that. We've all recognized that that's how life seems to be. And so through this study of Ecclesiastes, we're going to see that. We're going to recognize that we're not just imagining that, that that is actually how life sometimes is. And so there's a phrase that I want us to think about as we go through this study, and it's this. It's recognizing the ideal. That's the ideal of the proverb world, but accepting the paradoxical. That's that things don't always work out like they're supposed to. Things don't always happen the way they should, right? And that word may not be familiar to you, but it's something similar to the idea of trying to drink something to warm up, you know, and you're thinking, well, I need to get something in my body. We don't think about that during the summer, but you know, it's wintertime and I'm cold and I'm gonna drink a hot cup of tea and I'm gonna drink it and suddenly I feel cold. Right? It's the idea, but that doesn't make any sense. How could that be possible? So that's the idea, and that's a lot of times what the preacher of Ecclesiastes points out. that this is how it should happen. This is the way it should be. But when you experience it, this is what you get instead. Right? And so that's where we're going to go, and that's where we're going to be with our thoughts, recognizing the ideal, but still accepting the paradoxical things of life and your life pursuits. And I think this is really important. When we're thinking about life in general, and we're living the wisdom life, and we're trying to do the best we can in Jesus, and we're following after the Proverbs wisdom, and we're chasing after that in our life, and in our life, we run across something that just doesn't work out the way it should. That we run across something and it's just, I don't get it. And it's so hard sometimes to reconcile that. And sometimes it even makes us angry. And we think, that doesn't make any sense. I've sacrificed and I've done well. I've done everything I'm supposed to do and everything is supposed to work out. And it doesn't. We get mad, we get frustrated, and we get angry. And I think what books like this is a very unique book, by the way, in the Bible. There's not really anything else like it. But I think books like this one, what they help us with are those moments. Those moments when we would think, oh, this is so frustrating. It's not supposed to be this way. It's not supposed to work out this way. I've done everything that I'm supposed to do, and this wasn't supposed to happen. That we come to realize that, hey, sometimes life is like that, right? Sometimes life is like that. And the truth of the matter is we need that kind of wisdom because that too is wisdom. It's wisdom to say that things don't always work out as they should. It's wisdom to say that even in your best effort, things may fall apart. It's wisdom to say, yes, this is the ideal, but life happens. Because the truth is, if we don't learn that now, if we don't learn that from the preacher, if we don't learn that right now, we will. Isn't that true? If you don't embrace that truth now, you will find out. If you live long enough, you'll find out. Someday you're going to come to realize that what he is saying is true. So what we need to do is we need to learn it now. We need to learn it now and know that we're going to do what wisdom tells us to do. We're going to pursue wisdom. We're going to do everything we're supposed to do. But sometimes things do not work out the way they should. And we need to be okay with that. We need to realize that that is how life tends to be. So what we're going to do is, as we're reading through chapter 1, of Ecclesiastes, we're going to skip to verse 12, all right? And we're going to listen to the preacher talk a little bit, and then he's going to come back and we're going to read the poem. And so we're doing things a little bit backwards, but I want to introduce you to this idea in that way. It says, I, the preacher, have been king over Israel in Jerusalem. So they're in this in plus chapter verse 1 gives us the impression that this sounds a lot like Solomon. Although his name is not really used here, it gives us the impression that's who this is. In verse 13, it says, and I set my mind to seek and to explore by wisdom concerning all that has been done under heaven. It is a grievous task, the preacher says, which God has given the sons of men to be afflicted with. It's strange, isn't it? It's like here's a man who seemingly has all the wisdom of God. And he says, it's a grievous task. It's an affliction. And we would have to say, well, wait a minute, right? I thought everything would begin to make sense if I had all the wisdom of God. I thought life would become easier. I thought that by acquiring wisdom, everything would just be amazing and life would be so easy and things would just work out the way they were supposed to. I thought that if I finally understood the meaning of life through wisdom, that everything would work out, right? And the preacher has that, okay? That's the idea. The preacher has that, but he's using it as a lens, an investigative lens, and he's taking what he knows, all the knowledge, all the wisdom given to him by God, and he's looking at the world, and he's investigating the world, and he's looking for the meaning of life, and he says, all that has been done under heaven, everything, all these things, and he's conflicted. He's conflicted with what he sees. He knows the way it should be, but he's conflicted with what he sees in the world. Look at verse 14. He says, I have seen all the works which have been done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and striving after the wind. What is crooked cannot be straightened, and what is lacking cannot be counted. Well, that word vanity, you may have a different word in your translation. It's a difficult word to translate. It's the Hebrew word hevel, H-E-B-E-L, but it's pronounced hevel with a V. And it literally means wind or vapor. So it's kind of a metaphor. And so that's what makes it hard to translate sometimes. But we have in New American Standard the word vanity. Some people have useless, meaningless. There's several different ways. But the idea is something that is wind or vapor. Something that is vapor. And we understand what that means. If you have something that is just wind or just vapor, it's there. You can see it. You can see the results of it. You know it's there. But if you were to try to reach out and grab vapor, what would happen? You just couldn't get it. You know, you never can get a hold of it. And even if you were driving through the fog, you know, we say it's so thick we can cut it with a knife. Well, no, you actually couldn't, right? But it's there. It has an effect, but there's nothing to grab onto, right? And he's looking at the world around him, and he's considering the world around him, and he's seeing the affairs of man as they go about their business. And he says, it's like the wind. It's like vapor. It's vain. It's hevel. Now look at verse 16. He said, I said to myself, behold, I have magnified and increased wisdom more than all who were over Jerusalem before me. And my mind has observed a wealth of wisdom and knowledge. Verse 17, and I set my mind to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. And I realized that this also is striving after the wind. Right? It's with all that God has given him, with all the wisdom, with all the understanding, with all the discernment, he still comes to the conclusion that it's vapor. That it's wind. It's striving after the wind. It's hevel. Now look at verse 18. He says, because in much wisdom there is much grief, and in increasing in knowledge results increasing pain. You know, we have a saying, it's been around for a long time. I don't know when it began. I probably should have looked that up. Google would have known, right? But we have a saying that says, ignorance is what? Bliss. Ignorance is bliss. We know that, don't we? I mean, the older we get, we think, oh, man, you know, when I was ignorant, it was so blissful. You know? I enjoyed those days. I enjoyed those moments. I had nothing to worry about. I had nothing to fear. I didn't even think about the worries of life. You know, it's kind of like being able to skip through a field as a kid, and the grass is beautiful, and the sun is shining, and it's beautiful weather, and you're just skipping along, you know, and you're not even thinking about anything. And then your mom looks at you and you say, hey, watch for snakes. And you're like, snakes? What do you mean snakes? You know, I'm enjoying my time here in the field, but now I got to watch for snakes? And then from then on, you cannot think about anything else, right? But there's snakes in the grass. Because it's true, ignorance is bliss. Ignorance is bliss. And what we see from the writer is he's looking at everything with all the wisdom and all the understanding that God has given him. And he's trying to make sense out of the world. And he's trying to find the meaning of life. And he says, striving after the wind. It's vanity. It's hevel. It's like trying to grab vapor. Just passes through your fingers. What is the meaning of all of this, right? And he looks at all the activity and he considers the ideal. It's our proverb lessons, right? The ideal that things should happen this way, that if you do this, this will happen. If you do that, that'll happen. And he considers that and he knows that. He knows God's divine order in things. But then he sees what's really going on and he questions. He questions. He struggles with that. So go back to verse 2, because that kind of introduces us to who we're talking about. And so I think that the poem makes a lot more sense in that context. But in verse 2, the preacher says, vanity of vanities, hevel of hevels, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. And that's dark, right? I mean, it is. I mean, doesn't he know that the Bible is supposed to be about all this happiness and joy and hope and peace and love and all of this? That how dare he, right, say something like this? How dare he burst our bubble? How dare he throw this wrench into the utopia that we think that the world will be like when we become followers of God and followers of Jesus? That doesn't he know that it's all about health and wealth and prosperity? I mean, who is this guy? What's he talking about? How dare he say these things about what we know the world is, right? But he's being honest. He's being honest with himself and with what he sees. Now look at the next verse. He says, what advantage does man have in all his work which he has that he does under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains the same. Age after age, generation after generation, people have come and people have gone, right? The earth, however, is constantly being. It's constantly existing and constantly being repopulated with people. People are born and people die and the earth is being repopulated. And he's just pointing that out. It's just a cycle. It's just a cycle. People come and people go. Right? And we know that because we can go and we can see ruins of great nations and ruins of great empires. They had great hopes. They had great expectations. And at one time, they thought that nothing could ever happen to us. Nothing's ever going to change. We will always be a world power. We will always be in control. And where are they now? Another nation has taken their place. Another kingdom has taken their place. And another. And the cycle continues, generation after generation. The only thing that remains constant is that the earth continues to be, right? The only thing that remains constant in the story is that the earth continues to be. I was working for a company, so when I was younger, and, you know, felt like I could take on the world, and I thought, you know, I'm smarter than everybody, and I know more than everybody else. We've all been there, right? So don't say you haven't, because you have. All right, so we've been there, and we understand that, and I would think to myself, you know, this company I'm working for is lucky, you know, right? Because here I am, I'm a hard worker, I show up, I do my job, I know I do a good job, and I pay attention, and other people don't, and that probably was true. I mean, there's some people who just don't really care. But, you know, I did. And I thought, you know, if I leave this company, they're going to be in trouble. Right? I mean, the work's not going to get done. Things are not going to get done. Things aren't going to get done on time. And guess what? When I left, guess what continued? The work. It continued. Nothing stopped. I didn't stop anything. Right? I wasn't the main cog in the machine. It wasn't me. Right? And then I think back on how naive I was to even think that it was all about me, and it was, if I stop doing, then everything's going to stop. But sometimes our efforts are like that. We feel like we're putting so much effort into something and so much attention into something. We're building up to something, and we think, you know, if it weren't me, it would be nobody. If I weren't doing this, nobody would do it. If I wouldn't make this work, it would never work. And the preacher of Ecclesiastes says, yeah, you know what? Another generation's going to come, and they're going to do the same thing. Another generation's going to come, and they're going to do the same thing. Somebody else is going to take your place. Somebody else is going to come along. You're going to die. Somebody else is going to be born. They're going to do the same thing that you've done. He says, it's hevel. It's hevel to put too much stake in those things. It's hevel to be too invested in those things, because another generation is coming. Look at verse 5. He says, look at creation in itself. He says, the sun rises and the sun sets, and hastening to its place, it rises there again. You know, it's kind of like if the sun were a person, you know, it would rise and then set and then quickly run over and get back and rise again and set day in and day out, day in and day out. Look at verse 6. Blowing towards the south, it says, then turning towards the north, the wind continues swirling along, and on its circles, courses, the wind returns. All the rivers flow into the sea, yet the sea's not full. And then it says, to the place where the rivers flow, there they flow again. Everything in creation, as you examine the world through the lens of of wisdom and contemplation, and you're thinking about how things are, and it's just a circle. Everything is moving in a circular motion. It continues on and on. The sun rises, the sun sets, and the sun does it all over again, right? And the rivers, I mean, we watch the rivers dump into the sea over and over, but the sea doesn't get any more full. It doesn't get any deeper, right? Because the water evaporates, and it's a circle, and it comes back, and it rains sometimes, not all the time, but, you know, some places it rains, and then it rains, and then the rivers fill up, and then it goes right back in again. It's just a circle, constantly, continually moving around over and over again. And look at verse 8. He says, all things are wearisome. It's tiring. It's exhausting to think about this. Man is not able to tell it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor is the ear filled with hearing. You know, we've always loved going to the Texas Hill Country. That's where I grew up. And I always loved going down there. I always thought, you know, it would be great just to live here. And you could just see this every day, all day, right? You know, but one of the things about living in a place like that is you see it every day, all day, right? You see the mountains, you see the rivers, you see the streams, you see the animals all day, every day, all day, every day. And eventually it just becomes mundane, right? You don't even think about it anymore. It's like, hey, did you see that beautiful sunset? No, I didn't see it. I was sleeping in. I wasn't paying attention. I was thinking about something else. But when you come and you visit a place like that and you haven't been there and you go down and you're thinking, oh, it's so beautiful. So amazing. Because it's not something you're experiencing all the time, but life can just become mundane. We can miss the things that are valuable in this world. We can miss the beauty of this world if we're just going through the motions. We get busy with work. We get busy with family. We get stressed. We don't think about it anymore. But then when you go and visit for the first time, it's beautiful. When you go and visit after a long period of time of being away, it's beautiful. And it's no longer mundane. And the preacher is just simply saying that the cycle of creation just continues on and on. Now, in some aspects, if you read through the Psalms, it is the cycle of creation that the psalmist will point out and say, look, there is a God, right? If you see how things continue, see how the sun rises and the sun sets, see how the wind blows, see how the rivers continue to flow and it rains and they flow and it rains and they flow, that is evidence that there is a divine creator, that there is a God. But the preacher is looking at it and he's saying, oh, it's tiresome. It just makes me tired to even think about the cycle of life and how things are progressing. Look at verse 9. He says, that which has been is that which will be, and that which has been done is that which will be done. So there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one might say, this is new? He says, already it has existed for ages, which were before us, right? And we also have a saying about that too, right? The more things change, the more they what? Stay the same. The more things change, the more they stay the same. You know, you think about war for an example. I know that's not something we like to think about often, but you think about war and you think, oh, you know, we're so much better than it we used to be. We have so much more technology. We're so stronger. We have all these things. We have all these weapons of war, right? It's all new. It's a new way of doing war. And that might be true. We have new advancements in technology. We have new resources. We have new ways of doing things. We have new ways of fighting wars. But guess what? It's still war. At the end of the day, it has all been done before. We're just learning new ways to do old things, right? We're just learning new ways to do old things. It's all been done before. And the preacher would say, that too is hevel. It's hevel to think about all the things that we consider new, that we consider good. And we say, yeah, look at this new thing I've invented, or look at this new way of doing this, and look how new this is. Everything is new. And he says, no. It's all been done before. Nothing is truly new under the sun. People are still people. Things are still things. Work is still work. War is still war. That all these things will continue and have continued and will continue again. And we may not want to hear this. And I know this is always the danger of preaching through Ecclesiastes. People are like, well, that's depressing. I don't want to hear that. I don't want you to talk about that kind of stuff. I want you to talk about the good things. I want to go back to Proverbs and talk about how that's going to make my life better. We may not want to hear it, but we've all experienced it, haven't we? We've all experienced it. We've all experienced these kinds of things, and we would prefer to live in the proverbial ideal life that God has presented in His divine creation, and where things make sense, right? That's where we want to live, where things make sense, where the righteous are rewarded and the wicked suffer. That's where we want to be. We want to be in a place where when you do good, good things come back to you. That when you save, oh, you'll have more for the future. That those are the kinds of things that we want to think about and we want to do, and we should do those things. We should think about those things. But we have to be constantly vigilant that things don't always work out that way. Because there will be times in our life when things will not work out that way. And what happens then? What happens to your faith? What happens to your faith when you think everything is moving on like it's supposed to, and the world is going exactly the way it's supposed to go, and you're doing good things and you're getting good things in return, and then all of a sudden, boom, the bomb drops. And you're thinking, oh, what happened? Where did I go wrong? Why doesn't God love me anymore? Why isn't He blessing me anymore? What's happening? Right? What happens to your faith when things suddenly take that turn? And what the author of Ecclesiastes is trying to communicate to us is you should expect that to happen sometimes. Not all the time. That's not really the point, I don't think. But it does happen. It does happen. So don't put too much faith in it. Don't put too much stock in it. Don't invest too heavily in those things, right? He wants us to live in the ideal world of Proverbs that recognize the paradoxical things of Ecclesiastes, that the reality of things don't always work out the way they should. And I think this is true with the people of the past, God's people. As they read through these wisdom literatures, they came to realize this, and they were able to use it to live faithful, continual lives in God. But I also think it's very much true for followers of Jesus as well. That followers of Jesus, we still live in this world where things don't always happen the way we would expect them to happen. And I believe that both of these wisdoms are two sides of the same coin. They're not opposites per se, but they're the same coin. You turn over to one side and you say, yeah, that's how it's supposed to be. And you flip it over to the other and say, well, yeah, but that's how it happened. It's two sides of the same coin. How it should be and how sometimes it works out. And if knowing that ahead of time will help us in our faith, knowing that ahead of time will help us not to invest too heavily in things that of this world. Not to invest too heavily in things that are vapor, things that are hevel, things that are wind. Don't go chasing after something and invest all your efforts in all your life and stake everything that you are and everything that you have on that one thing. Because the writer will say, the preacher will say, that's hevel. It's not smart. That's not wise. Don't do that, because those things too will fail you. Don't invest too heavily in things that will fail you. I was thinking about Jesus' words. I'd like you to consider them as well. Matthew chapter 6. And He says in verse 19, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in or steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Right? It's wise to save. It's wise to invest. It's wise to work hard. It's wise to set goals. But it is not wise. It is not wise to think that these things, that these efforts are worth investing everything in, because they're not. They're not. That's not wisdom. These things are hevel. These things are wind. These things are vapor. They will not last forever. But also, the preacher of Ecclesiastes, he knows that, and he realizes the conflict within a person of faith, and he realizes the conflict that this produces, and he does offer some peace of mind in chapter 3 in verse 14 when he says, yes, all those things, the efforts of man, the work, the striving, the saving, the doing all of that stuff, you should do it, but you have to recognize that it's like chasing the wind. It's like trying to grasp onto vapor. It's hevel. It's going to fail you eventually. But he says there are some things in life that will not fail you. There are some things that will never fail. There are some things that will always be solid. There are some things you can always stand on. There are some things that you can always rely on. And he says, I perceive that whatever God does endures forever. That's right. Whatever God does endures forever. Nothing can be added to it, nor anything taken from it. God has done it, so the people fear before him. It's the conclusion of all of his thoughts. Whatever God does lasts forever. Whatever we do, our efforts, our striving, our investing in life, right? If we're too wrapped up in those things, we are going to get what the writer says we're going to get. Nothing, right? But if we focus on and we realize that God and what he does, what he has created, what he has purposed, that those things last forever, that storing up for ourselves treasures on earth is hevel, but storing up for ourselves treasures in heaven is eternal. That's where we need to be. We need to view both sides of the coin and learn the wisdom of God. If there's anybody here this morning who struggles with life, because I think we all do, and I think books like this really help us with our struggles. And if you struggle with life and you need the prayers of this congregation for peace, that is available to you. Let us pray for you. Maybe you haven't even begun the journey of following Jesus, and you desire to be baptized and become part of the family of God, have your sins forgiven. That opportunity is also available to you if you would stand as we sing.